Let's play some cards.
From Harrah's St. Louis Casino and Hotel, this is The Final Table, starring Team Poker Stars pro Dennis Phillips with Paul Harrah's and the poker coach, Joe McGowan. Brought to you by Poker Stars, Reactor Watches, and the Poker Players Alliance.
Winner, winner, chicken dinner.
You got it.
Now, from the Harrah's St. Louis Poker Room, here are Dennis and Paul on 590 The Fan KFNS.
Jackpot.
Thank you, sir. May I have another?
And welcome to another day at St. Louis's first World Series of Poker circuit event. This has been going on since the first day of April, and here we are now 13 days later and getting ready for the main event. Actually, as you're listening to this live on 590 The Fan KFNS, the main event is already underway, but we are recording this about 4 hours early today because Dennis is going to be playing in that event, as will our special guest today, poker pro Bernard Lee. Hi, guys. How are you today?
Well, let's put it this way. If at 2 o'clock we're already out, both of us, there's going to be a bottle of tequila split or something. I don't know why.
There'll be some major issues if both of us are out. That's about the worst two bad beats you can get if both of us are out by that point.
I will not be playing in the main event today, but I've been having a lot of fun here with the cash games. And before we get into all of your adventures from Connecticut, you're both just flying in from there at the NAPT. I want to take a moment to congratulate the people who have been doing so well in the events here. As you know, there have been 10 events thus far, starting with a $350 buy-in on April 2nd. A guy by the name of Dustin Grimm, who runs a bar poker circuit called Top Pair Poker, took down event number one for a $40,000 payday. Event number two, which is the one that I final tabled and came in fifth, was won by a guy named Raymond Lance from Gibson City, Illinois. Huge comeback, by the way. Another one of those classic cases of a guy who was way out chipped when he got down to heads up at the final table and managed to pull out a victory. Event number three was the seniors event that was taken down by Robert Irby from Keller, Texas. Number four, people in the high limit community here in St. Louis know Raul Chaudhary from Baldwin, who started the table short stacked and fought his way through the field and ended up taking down event number four. Number five was taken down by Austin McCormick from St. Louis. Number six, a guy who is a real poker veteran in this town, Gene Esker from Illinois. His nickname is Bones. Anybody who has played with Bones knows him because he uses actual bones as his card protector. And by the way, Bones had three caches in this World Series of Poker circuit event, including first place in event number one to take down $22,000 there. Event number seven was taken down by Doug Lovelace, who is a tournament regular here at Harrah's St. Louis. Event number eight, Matt Lawrence took down the $560 buy-in event this weekend. He's from Tulsa, Oklahoma. Event number nine went to Joe Shimeka, beating out the much-favored St. Louis poker professional John Adams, who again had Joe out-chipped at the table 3, 4, 5, 6 to 1. I don't know what the numbers were, but eventually Joe was able to make a comeback and called a bluff with a pair of threes John had shoved on the flop on an 8-high board with ace-queen, and Joe had bottom pair of threes, called him down for the entire stack and won that event. And also congratulations to Felicia Jonico from Sherman, Texas, who took down the first ever ladies event here. All of that over the course of the last 10 days or so, and today the main event is underway. It's a $5,000 buy-in event, and we've got a few pros who've come to town, including Bernard Lee, and we saw Paul Wasaga was here. And Sohail Summerdin is in town, and Alan Kessler, and a bunch of others. And we don't know who else is going to show up because they're probably still sleeping.
That's right.
As we record this.
Absolutely.
So
I would be sleeping too, my friends.
Well, we appreciate you getting up to record the show with us this morning.
Anytime.
Tell us about your adventures, Dennis, at the NAPT at Mohegan, the second big Poker Stars event of the year. I guess third if you include the PCA.
Well, the PCA was sort of the unofficial kickoff of it. It's when we announced the NAPT. It's when we announced about going to the Venetian. And it was another roaring success. Unbelievable. 700-plus people in there on the main event. First prize of $750,000. It's going to be televised on ESPN. It's just unbelievable. They've now two of these now, and both of them have had multi-million-dollar pots in them.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to have two more of them. later this year. Can't announce where they're at right now, but they should be coming very shortly. They'll probably be similar, may even be larger than this. The guys at the Mohegan Sun are confident the next year will top the 1,000 mark for their main event without any problem.
I wouldn't be surprised. And the thing that is the real game changer here is because PokerStars can qualify people online, you don't count on just people sitting down in sit and goes as we have here at Harrah's or showing up and putting down $5,000 in cash on their own. They can qualify online for free, in fact, on PokerStars.net for the future NAPT events.
Well, what it does, though, it gets a guaranteed pool. When you have 300 or 400 people that are qualifying online, you know that they're going to be there. Mm-hmm. The pros then know that the pots are going to be good size. They also know they're going to be playing against some Internet people that may not have had anywhere near as much experience as them on it. However, sometimes they can run into a little problem.
Like?
I got to tell you what happened here at the Mohegan Sun. They had a room set up that would hold, and again, I don't know the exact number, it's 500 and some people that would hold in there. We had 500 and some the morning of, before it started there, 560 I think they were at or whatever. They assigned seats.
Mm-hmm.
They filled the room.
Mm-hmm.
All the overflow then goes to the other room over in the poker room on that. Well, all of the pros that came in town just for this and everything, guess when they signed up?
That morning. Now, these are the pros who are coming into town, and they're going to lay down $5K in cash.
Correct.
They did not register ahead of time.
Correct.
They figured they fly in the night before, wake up in the morning, put their money down. And
simple and easy. They do it all the time, right?
So what do they do if all the seats are already assigned?
Well, they did the overflow area over in the poker room. So when you walked in, there was like a who's who among all the semi-pros and the pros. Every table had 4, 5, or 6 pros in it. And they're all looking around going, we thought there were going to be some fishes here. Where are they at?
Now, all the PokerStars pros, of course, were already signed up ahead of time.
Right.
Vanessa and Daniel and the others.
Yeah.
So you were in the main room.
Oh, yeah, we were fine.
So these were all the non-PokerStars. Did you end up in there, Bernard?
No, I was fortunate. I mean, I live in the area, obviously, and I was heading down to a meeting in Rhode Island. So just I said, you know what, instead of me worrying about racing, and I actually just got in as they started shuffling up and dealing. So I'm fortunate. I registered a week earlier, so I didn't have an issue. But, yeah, we knew on ESPN.com they interviewed a ton of players, one of which who was very vocal about it, Alan Kessler, who, of course, does his research and looks around and says, wait a second, no one here qualified online. So if no one here qualified online, guess what? They're all that way. And they had said 600 people they thought that was their limit, which, you know, I'm a little surprised considering that Venetian had 872. You would have thought they would think a little bit more that would be beyond that. But, you know, look, there's always little glitches here and there when the casino's going to run the first big event. And, you know, they got him in there. You know, you have the range of Alan Kesslers who are really upset, and then you have the Gavin Smith who goes, whatever, I'm going to have to go through them all anyway. So whatever happens. You know,
exactly.
So it's a good attitude to have for Gavin, you know. And
by the way, have you ever found a day or an issue that Alan Kessler wasn't upset about?
No. I know they nicknamed him the Chainsaw, you know, maybe a whistleblower. I don't know. I'm not sure. I mean, I know Alan very well, and I think he's a great. He knocked me out of the AC circuit event set over set. In December, and he's a good player. I mean, he's a real grinder, and he plays very, very well. But Alan will find something out very quickly if there's an issue. And, I mean, I guess we need those people in poker, too, so there's nothing wrong with it.
Yeah. But it's also one of those things that by the time it happens, you can't do anything about it. You're not going to go and reassign seats for 700 people.
No, absolutely, and I can't fault them. It's just another one of those times, similar to what the WSOP on the last day. People just assumed that it wouldn't be any big deal.
Sure.
Who cares? We just go down there, we sign up 20 minutes ahead of time and play.
Right.
Well, that's not always the case. Sometimes signing up ahead of time, being a little prudent, is to your advantage.
Dennis is talking about day 1D of the main event last year, where they got absolutely full with 2,800 players, and they could not fit another player in.
Yep.
And a lot of people tried showing up at 8 o'clock that morning and found themselves shut out four hours before the main event last day.
And I'm going to give advice to a lot of people who are listening that are considering going out this year to the World Series. I'm not talking about the main event. I'm talking about the stimulus events over the weekend.
The
stimulus event was so popular, and I was flying in Friday night, getting there at 11 at night, Friday night. The tournament was starting on Saturday morning. I was really going to play on Sunday. I was going to relax on Saturday. Before I left Boston at 7 p.m., I talked to Nolan Donnelly and says, it's sold out. I couldn't believe it. So I'm warning everyone now, if you're thinking about playing any of these stimulus events, register online or get out there early. You can't have a friend do it for you. I tried that one already.
No, you can't.
You have to do this in person. So I'll tell you, I went out and taught the World Series during the Venetian. So I was teaching the World Series Academy. I couldn't play in the NAPT Venetian. I already registered. I already registered for the first stimulus event because I know I want to play. I know I'm flying out.
Right.
Why get shut out? I was like number 32 or something like that.
32 of what will be 6,000.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. That's a great point. You know, if you don't want to get shut out of some of these events, and the smaller events
Absolutely.
Are going to have huge fields
Absolutely.
As well, not just the main event, you can go to WSOP.com right now and register for any of those
right
up until, I think, 2 weeks before
exactly.
an event.
Exactly.
So if you wait till the last minute, you run into any number of problems. And, you know, this instance at Mohegan Sun was a classic example of that.
Sure.
Well, and they're talking – I mean, we're talking about 2 weeks in advance. People might think, oh, well, that's still far away. Hey, I don't want to be the bearer of bad news, but we're 6-7 weeks away from the World Series, which, by the way, I'm really getting excited about.
Yeah.
You procrastinate, which poker players are known to do.
Yep.
You're going to be in big trouble, and you're going to be disappointed because a lot of people – this $1,000 event is their main event.
Right.
I mean,
absolutely.
Let's be realistic.
Yeah, there's a ton of people. I didn't realize that, and I talked to some of the guys out there last year on it. A ton of people. They wait all year to
absolutely.
Come out there for one weekend
absolutely.
To play the 1,500, the 1,000, whichever they're picking on.
Right.
You know, maybe the senior event or something like that. Can you imagine planning the whole thing, getting all excited, going out there, and they shut the door down, say, sorry, sold out, gone.
1D, they said, what, 10, 20 Australians flew in just for this on 1D, and they couldn't play.
They got into the Rio at 7 o'clock that morning, having flown across the Pacific all
imagine?
Night long. They got to the Rio at 7 o'clock in the morning, and they were either the last ones to get in, or one of them said, I'm going to go nap for a couple hours. That guy didn't get in.
Unreal.
And by the way, the same is true of hotel rooms
and
airline seats.
Yep.
If you're planning on going to the series, which starts on Memorial Day weekend and goes for 6 weeks through July 4th weekend, you know, don't wait to do that. As far as the 1K events, there's actually going to be not one of those this year, but there'll be a $1,000 buy-in event, six of them, on every Saturday of the World Series of Poker this year. So if you can't get in the first one, you might be able to get into one of the others, but absolutely don't procrastinate.
Yeah, somebody asked me about that in an interview recently. I'm hoping that it doesn't dilute it. You know what I mean? By like saying that 6,000 the first week, and the reason why is because everyone, well, that's the only 1,000 one, I'm going to go for it. Mm-hmm. Now that there's a 1,000 every single weekend, I'm really hoping that people are, well, I don't have to go to the first one. I'll go to the second or third one. You know, and it kind of dilutes again. I'm hoping I'm wrong. I'm really hoping I'm wrong.
Well, if you look at last year, though, other than the stimulus one, or say 2 years ago, the most popular ones other than the main event were the $1,500
ones. Of course.
So I think it's just going to be more of the same. They just made it a little more affordable, and this time, and I would love to see 4,000 and 5,000 and 6,000 fields.
Yeah, don't get
me
wrong. I don't think that we're not going to get 4,000 or 5,000. We're going to, but I don't think they're all going to sell out. I don't think it's all going to be a mad rush. I think the first one will because it's Memorial Day weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I don't think they're all going to sell out. I just don't.
Look at what happened here on the first Friday event of this circuit event here at Harrah's St. Louis. We had 675 people for that $350 buy-in. Since then, we've had several more. None of the other fields has come close to that.
Right.
And I don't know what the number is going to be for the main event today. We're hoping it's 100, 120, maybe 150. I don't know what
guys, get over. I got an over-under bet with my editor at ESPN.com.
What's the number?
We put 163, so now I'm a little disappointed.
I'll take the under.
Oh, man. I was so confident, too.
They did have 280 in the 1K event here on Saturday, which was absolutely terrific. This is the final table. We're at Harrah's St. Louis, which is hosting the World Series of Poker Circuit event. I'm Paul Harris, along with Team Poker Stars Pro Dennis Phillips and Foxwoods Poker Pro Bernard Lee. He signed an endorsement deal with Foxwoods Casino a few weeks ago, and we were happy to have him on to talk about that. He's also the co-host of ESPN's Inside Deal. Let's get back to the NAPT that you just played in Mohegan. Any big hands? How'd you do, by the way?
I cashed. They paid 104 people. I went out 85th on it.
Mm-hmm.
So solid cash in. Other than a very short time in one level, I was beneath chip average the entire tournament. In fact, in the middle of day two on that, when the chip average was somewhere around 75,000, I got all the way down to 6,700.
Wow.
Yeah, they weren't too scared of me at the table anymore.
Now, you know, I've talked about this before, about knowing you, you know, before you went off to play the main event in 08, I knew you for years here in St. Louis, and you always had that reputation, at least in my mind, of being the guy who stayed disciplined even when you got low on chips. You lost 50% of your stack, 60% of your stack, 70% of your stack. You didn't say, well, you know what, any two cards, I'm going to put it all in here. You still waited for an opportunity. So you're at 6,700 when the chip average is 75,000. What, you know, what are the blinds then? 500 and 1,000?
They were either 4 and 8 or 5 and 1,000, one or the other. I have like 6 or 7 big blinds. I basically have nothing on this. So, and I did and I, the only time, but boy, did I do a major suck out.
Usually you're trying to get it in with the best of it in this case.
Look, I'm telling you, everybody folded to me on the button. I have no chips left. At that time, I'm probably shoving with almost anything.
Right.
I looked down at a king, queen, and went, hallelujah, yeah, here are the chips.
Exactly.
Get them in there. Small blind takes all of, a tenth of a second to call me. Didn't even raise. Just, I call.
Yeah.
You know, big blind looks at him, goes, that's suspicious. I fold. He turns over two aces. No problem.
Yeah.
But, hey, jack nine on the flop, ten on the turn, I'm golden.
There you go.
That's amazing.
That's how you get going. You know, when I final tabled the event last weekend, I was down to 4,000 in chips, and, you know, you got to suck out with your fives against eights, and that gives you the little kick start to get you right back in the tournament.
But there were...
You have to do that, by the way. People ask, you know, do you have to be a great player to win tournaments?
Right.
Yeah, you have to be a good player. But you also have to have one or two of those. I mean, I don't care if you're Phil Ivey or Phil Guy off the street. You've got to have some of those if you're going to continue to play in a tournament. It's just going to have to happen at some point. I don't know anybody who's ever gotten an entire tournament by getting their hand in only with the best of it, the entire tournament, and winning every time.
Well, you got what you're saying there is also you have to prevent from getting unlucky.
Correct.
You know, you're getting an 80-20, 81-19 every time. You know, you multiply that or use that eight times in a row, it's almost impossible for you to win every single time. In my 05 run, I actually never got in with the worst. I mean, honestly. And I lost on a 90-10 on the river to Aaron Kendrick, because how many times can that hold up?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, so that's the real thing that's got to – and you look at it over and over again. Everybody who did well at some point or another did something to suck out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, we can go through every single champion there is. Or at the very least, win a coin flip.
Well,
you know
you either got to win or miss a coin flip, so you've got to not get sucked out on.
Right.
Or you've got to suck out on. There's always some controversial hands. Some where you kind of go, woo, thank you.
Right.
Particularly when you're low in chips. Look what happened to Joe Catta last year at the World Series. You know, you get low in chips. He was the short stack at that final table.
Absolutely.
And caught cards and was able to suck out multiple times and ended up winning the whole thing.
The other thing that people don't realize, sometimes it's when you get those few hands, that one in every 221 times that you get the pocket aces or something, are you going to actually make money on it?
Right.
When you get those aces or your kings, then do you turn around and the guys behind you has queens and jacks? And so, you know, you're doubling up and that. So sometimes it's just a matter of that, being lucky enough that when you have the hand, somebody else also has a hand just below yours.
Right.
Anything else from the NAPT stand out? Any other hands?
There were a couple of really interesting hands. I got to tell you about one of them. Scott Sievers came into day three with only 50,000 in chips.
I heard.
Way, way short and everything. He got in on my table. I was with Phil Ivey, some others. I had a table from hell, but we won't even go into that. Scott doubled up and then doubled up, and he's over 300,000 in chips.
Yeah.
When a hand came up, I looked down at a queen jack. Scott was the button. I was to his right to act on it. The monster stack at the table, who had 700 and some thousand, was to Scott's left. So we're three in a row there on it.
Yeah.
Folded around to me. I had queen jack. I just made a standard raise out there on it. Scott Smooth called me, the guy with the deep stack 4X, putting a monster out there. I'm short stack. I started out with around 100,000 for it at this time. So I folded my queen jack, and Scott Smooth called again.
Yeah.
Flop comes queen, queen, six.
Oh.
Okay, I'm dying over here now.
Yeah.
Wondering, you know, this was my chance to double up and all this other and the whole bit. Check, check.
Yep.
Turn card comes a 10. Check.
Now you're really killing yourself.
I am absolutely. I knew this was my pot. I've totally screwed up royally on this thing. But with his monster raise and Scott's call, there's a little over 30,000 in the pot. It's all maybe 32,000. It's not a lot of money out there yet, considering their stacks and all on it. River comes a four. Guy in the first position over there thinks about it for a minute and puts like a $22,000 bet out there. you know, 60-70% of the pot, kind of a, you know, a value bet you're guessing, or I've got something if you have nothing type of a deal on it. Goes around to Scott, who goes into the tank and thinks, and, you know, he's known for, you know, being a little bit aggressive and everything like that, shoves all $300,000.
On a $22,000 bet into a $32,000 pot.
Ballpark, something like that, yes. Just
not suspicious at all.
No, 300 plus thousand just right out there, you know, and then sits back. And this guy just goes into the tank like crazy. No hand, he's even talking, says, there's not a single hand I can think of that this makes sense for, no matter what. I mean, I can't put you on sixes that you flop some boat because you wouldn't have checked flop and turn. I can't put you on an overpair. You would have done the same thing. I can't. He says, what the heck have you got? He says, I called. He turned over ace queen. If I'd have been in the hand, I'd have gone bye-bye.
Right.
I was history.
Yeah.
And because I'm sitting there, I had the fourth queen. I know they both don't have queens.
Right.
You know, I mean, it's just not going to happen.
Right.
Scott turns over pocket fours.
Oh, my God.
Makes the full house on the river.
I was going to say, did he have tens? You know, maybe
that's what I thought.
Kind of thought, but, you know, why wouldn't he lead out with the queen? But, oh, my gosh.
Yeah, unbelievable. So he doubles up. He's 600 and some thousand now, 650 or 60 or whatever, and it's just unbelievable.
Yeah, makes the final table. And
yeah, finished fourth. Fourth, I believe it was on that.
Yeah, Vanessa Selps, by the way, took down the whole thing at the NAPT at Mohegan Sun. We've got to take a break. We'll come back with more as the final table continues on the day of the main event of the World Series of Poker Circuit event here at Harrah's St. Louis on 590 The Fan, KFNS, and KFNS.com, and our podcast on thechipleader.com. This portion of the show is brought to you by PokerStars.net.
PokerStars is the place that I play and play all the time. Guys, I'm telling you, it's unbelievable the spread of games they have there right now. If you go to PokerStars.net, you can qualify to play in Europe, in Australia, in Latin America, in an NAPT. Right now they have one coming up from Monte Carlo. Can you imagine having an all-expense-paid trip to Monte Carlo and your buy-in paid for? Unbelievable. I'm telling you guys, you've got to get on the site. Go to PokerStars.net, download it, play your game, learn it. I don't care what kind of a game it is. I don't care what kind of level of expertise you have right now. The learning ability is right there. PokerStars.net. Do that, and maybe I'll see you in Monte Carlo.
You know, people here who play in the local cash games with me, and you're out of town, they say, where is Dennis now? And I tell them where you are on one of your travels, and they say, man, I would love to get paid to travel and play poker. Here's your chance.
There it is.
Yeah. Absolutely. That's a good point.
Just go play on PokerStars.net. You can qualify for any of these.
Oh, they got one now for Australia where you qualify for all the four events down there in mass. You can become their, you know, signature player or something like that just by winning it. They've got the World Cup coming up. The America's Cup that they're going to have down in Latin America. You qualify for it. I think there's the top five online people for these tournaments go down to last year it was Bariloche. Argentina, up in the mountains there, spend a week down there, get to play. We played a Mexican team and a Chilean team and an Argentina team and a U.S. team and a Canadian team, and wow. It's just unbelievable, the possibilities you have here.
All available there at PokerStars.net. You can, of course, find them in the sponsors section of Dennis's website, thechipleader.com, and take the link from there. We'll be right back with more of The Final Table.
Tuesday is Poker Day on 590 The Fan KFNS. So here are Dennis Phillips and Paul Harrah's at The Final Table, live from the poker room at Harrah's St. Louis Casino and Hotel.
And we are sitting here with Bernard Lee, poker professional, spokesperson for Foxwoods Casino in Connecticut, and WSOP main event veteran back in 2005, finished 13th, was it? Congratulations on that. He also has written a couple of books and teaches for the World Series of Poker Academy and has his own poker radio show that airs in Boston. Before we get back to our discussion here, a quick plug for a poker tournament that's being held this Friday night, April 16th, to benefit the St. Louis Men's Group Against Cancer. Dennis has done a lot of work for the fight against cancer in this country. Phil Gordon got you interested in the bad beat on cancer.
Absolutely. Still work with it. Work with Jan Mayer out of Washington on that.
This Friday night, there'll be a Texas Hold'em poker tournament at Pujols 5 at Westport Plaza. The registration starts at 6. The play starts at 7. $2,000 in cash and prizes, and they'll have a buffet and soft drinks and a silent auction and lots of other stuff. So if you want to play and help out a good cause, that's for the St. Louis Men's Group Against Cancer. By the way, if you've got an event coming up in the St. Louis area you'd like us to promote, send the details to DennisPhillipsPoker@gmail.com. Today's the day of the main event of the World Series of Poker Circuit event, which I would call a roaring success over the course of the last 10 or 11 days here in St. Louis. Harris has been a very good host of this. Jimmy Sommerfeld and his tournament crew are right at the top of their game and doing a great job. And lots and lots of people here happy, and people from out of town discovering how great poker is in St. Louis. We've had some very big PLO games going on here. Pat Walsh and some of the other big PLO pros here in town have been taking on some of the PLO pros from around the country, including a couple of big players from the Louisville area who have been in here, and they have been playing, I think it was 5-5-50 the other night. that's a very, very big game. So there was a lot of money on the table, plus lots of cash action going on. And if you were here, we're happy to have had you. And if you weren't here, we look forward to seeing you next year, or between now and then, when you come to St. Louis. We'll be playing here at our home casino, which is Harrah's St. Louis. Now, Bernard, we talked about Dennis's hands at the NAPT. Any that stick out in your mind from your play?
Overall, the first two levels were really uneventful, and then I got into a really big hand in level three. I was in mid-ish position. A guy under the gun plus one raised to, I think it was 525, so it had to have been probably 1-2 at this stage. Mm-hmm. And I looked down at kings, so I made it 1525. I basically 3x'd his bet. Folded around to the big blind, and he looked down at his hand, and he thought for a second, and he smooth called. I have to tell you, the warning bells went off. I went, that's not good. He's out of position, and you know, what is he trying to do? And then the under-the-gun plus one smooth call, too. So before the flop even came out, I said, if an ace comes, I'm just mucking my hand. I mean, it's not even worth it. Yeah. One of them's got ace-king. One of them's got ace-queen. And I think one of them might even have aces or queens or something like that. I'm worried.
Mm-hmm. You're looking for a rag flop.
Yeah, and even with a rag flop, I even said I'm not going to lose everything here. I mean, I'll tell you, I'm worried. I really am. But you can't ask for a better flop. Queen... king, queen, four.
King, queen, four. You flop at the top set.
Yeah, so I flop top set. And then the big blind let out for about the pot.
Thank you.
4,600. Mm-hmm. So the person next to me folded. And I just kind of thought the whole process through. The player had shown a tendency of giving chips away, not really being able to fold. So if I was right in my assessment that he's got either ace, king, or aces, I think he's going to ship it. So... I just said I'm not slow playing top set. I'm just going to play it. And so he put it up 46. I thought about it for a while. I think I put out 10-6, 10-4. Man, I'm just a normal what I would normally raise no matter what I have.
Mm-hmm.
And he thought about it for a while. Now I don't know if it was an act or whatever. Like he put his hand on his head, rubbing his head like and looking like he was agonizing over this decision. And then he went, I'm all in. I mean, before he finished in, I was snap called. I flipped it over.
Yeah.
And I know, honestly, I'm hoping it's ace-king, right? I would like this over with.
Yeah.
But he flipped over aces and blank. And so I doubled up to about 56,000 right there. So I thought, good, third level. What a great start. I'm really happy with it. I went with one read where I really felt like, ironically, the same player.
All right, before you go on to another hand, let's talk about that hand for just a second here. Because put yourself in the brain of the person who had aces there.
Yeah.
Who, as you said, smooth called pre-flop.
Yep.
Not necessarily a bad move.
No.
But when the flop comes out, king, queen, blank.
Right.
He has the guy behind him who called.
Right.
Now, he's got to be thinking, wow, I hope this guy has ace, king.
Right.
But he's also got to be worried about you. So there's two players behind him, including one who three-bet pre-flop.
Right.
He's got to be thinking, what did this guy three-bet with? Of all the cards he could be three-betting with, there's two of them on the board now, king and queen.
Yeah, I think, this is a tough position for him. You know, I can't blame him for shipping it all in. He does have aces. I don't know if he was rubbing his head because he was worried that I had one of these sets. Mm-hmm. I'm just not worried. Or if he was doing that as an act thinking I had ace king or ace queen and I'm going to ship it. Not ace queen, ace king. But I can't blame him 100%. Mind you, he did have a very big stack. He had like 65,000 at this point, so he wasn't crippled by any stretch of the imagination. I'm not so sure if I'm in that exact same situation. This guy raises me. I'm not so sure if I'm shipping it. You know, I might smooth call there with the aces. Also, let's take one step back, is that I'm not really sure if I would have smooth called my bet, because you could have easily had, you know, why do I want a third guy in this whole situation as well? Now, mind you, we would have probably, somebody asked me the question. They said, had he four bet you, what would you have done? I probably would have flatted him because I had position on him, see what the flop comes out. And obviously, we were getting it in no matter what happened either way.
Yep.
But I don't blame him, but you're right. He at least could have thought about it in the sense of maybe I'll flat here and see what happens.
Yeah.
I think what would have happened was is that if he flatted, he would have checked. To be honest, I would have checked behind him, showing weakness and maybe saying I have the ace high flush draw, you know what I mean? And then the turn boated me with a four. He probably bets, now I ship it, and then he's going to have to call at that point. So it would have probably ended up being the same thing, or maybe he could have gotten off on the river. You never know. But depending on how much was left. I mean, I probably had 20 left. If he makes it 7 or 8 on the river and I ship it for 18, he probably has to fold at that moment. But who knows? I mean, it was a tough spot. It was a really tough spot for him, you know?
What do you say, Dennis?
Actually, I mean, I was agreeing with you up till the four comes on the river. That makes it a little more difficult for him to fold, too, because if you had the king-queen suited that you raised with
right, he's got two. Yeah,
he's counterfeited there. You know, if you had the jack 10 and were trying to put a move because you flopped the open in, you know, it didn't hit.
Right. I mean, or the ace high flush draw or whatever.
None of those hitting and everything. Yeah. So,
Well, that's why I would have checked the turn, to be honest, in that specific situation, because I would want him to think, oops, I tried, I failed, you didn't go away. Yeah. You're checking, and I'm like, oh, well, I'll just check here because I can't try this again and then be crippled. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, in all honesty, I bet you he would have let out on the river.
Oh, I think he would have, too. Some value bet trying to get something
and
out of it.
Exactly. And then I would have just been like, enough.
Well, I don't think he had to lose all of his chips there. And I also think the way he played it, didn't you say he bet out on the flop?
Yeah. 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 See, I agree with that in some respects, is that he should have let me go.
Yeah.
Right.
Then he could have come back. And then when I jam, he goes, wait a second, this is an issue. And then you would have known.
Right.
Yeah, with aces there, you check raise and you move. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right.
Absolutely.
Right.
Especially if you're the big stack there. I don't think you need to lose all those chips and double up a player who, you know, is a pretty good player at the table. You don't want to give that guy. Giving you chips is not a good idea. You know?
If I wish I could hold on to them or build them lately.
This is the final table coming to you from Harris St. Louis. Paul Harris with Team Poker Stars Pro Dennis Phillips and Bernard Lee, the co-host of ESPN Inside Deal, both of whom are playing along with 100 or so other people in the main event of the World Series of Poker Circuit event going on today here at Harris St. Louis. Let's get to some listener email and a couple of other things in the news. A listener by the name of Rain O'Brien says, Dennis, I watched you on High Stakes Poker and love the radio show. I have to ask you, why on High Stakes Poker did you show all your bluffs or semi-bluffs? I know you probably didn't show all of them because we didn't get to see all of them, but showing weak players your hands can be beneficial if you want them to get a certain image of you. Why would you want players as great as Phil Ivey and Durr to have any additional information? I'd love to hear your thoughts on why you showed your cards.
Well, a couple of different reasons on that. And he's right. Normally, I do not show hands that way or anything. First of all, I was almost card dead. You saw the hands that I actually played and won with, a king 7, a 2, 3. I don't think they didn't show the 9-4 hand. That was another nice one that I had. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't you love playing the 9-4?
Yeah.
Yeah, right. There you go. No
problem.
Well,
after you played the king 7 and turned it over, didn't Barry Greenstein say to you, you know, you're waiting, waiting, waiting all day, and you finally get the king 7.
That's right. Yeah. That's right.
So, anyhow, I wanted to get a little bit of maybe some action if, you know, later on I actually do catch a hand or have something on this. The other thing about it is typically when a person sits down for the first time at the high stakes, they play like a nit. I mean, that's just the standard.
Sure.
You're in there, you're with Durr, with Phil Ivey, with
Patrick
Antonius, Daniel.
The best cash players in the world.
Yes.
Period. There is.
Exactly.
And people just expect you to kind of sit there and be a little intimidated to start with and only play some premium hands and the whole bit like that. And I want them to realize that's not what I was doing. So, you know, when I'm raising with a 2-3 or something, it's kind of sends a signal out there.
Yep.
So I didn't mind showing a few of those. I do agree with him that you shouldn't be showing them. I'm telling you, I go back there next time, I probably will not show a hand. But this time I wanted to establish a little something, and I think I did.
Bernard, what do you think about showing your cards?
I've said this when I teach the World Series Academy, when I teach my private students. If you show, there's a purpose. And Dennis had a purpose.
Mm-hmm.
You don't show just to show for your ego's sake or whatever it is. There's a purpose. And if you're going to show a bad hand, it's because Dennis says, next time I get it, I want action.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm going to show a good hand, It's because I want them to think, listen, I'm not just stealing from the button. I'm not just stealing your blinds. Look, I really have a hand. So if I ever show, there's always a purpose. Yep. You can figure out the purpose, and I'm not going to tell you necessarily what those purpose is, but there needs to be a purpose. Don't do it just to satisfy your ego. You know, that's not what you want to do. I mean, don't get me wrong. Once or twice, we've done that all the time. You know, we've had this hand that was such a huge hand, and I did it at Borgata once. I had a big read on him. I knew he had a big hand, but I knew he could lay it down. And just the way the hand played out, et cetera, et cetera. He tanked for 2 minutes. It was a break. There was a crowd of like 30, 40 people on. This was the biggest pot of the tournament so far. And I flipped over the bluff. I mean, I was bad. I flipped over the bluff. And but there was somewhat of a purpose, is that I wanted this guy to realize I wasn't just knitting it up, and hopefully he would eventually. But that's my point with it. Have a purpose.
Yep. That's actually very good words of wisdom. To be doing it just to be showing, you know, whatever, that's just horrendous. That's bad poker.
Yeah.
But if you have a reason behind it, and sometimes it's a hidden one.
Yeah.
It absolutely can be a hidden one. You know, you're trying to put this guy on a little mini tilt. You're trying lots of little things like that.
Yep.
So I don't mind showing hands every now and then. Do not make a habit of it.
Right.
When somebody, you know, does the usual, will you show me your hand, you know, be ready. That question is going to be fed to you every tournament sometime or other. But, you know, if you've got a purpose and it's a sound one, go for it.
Yeah. I would say I show one half of 1% of the time. Mm-hmm. And usually it is purely an image thing.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's because it's a guy who I'm really good friends with and I want him to know you made a good lay down. Mm-hmm. But even then, I don't want the rest of the table to know he made a really good lay down. So that, I mean, it's a very, very, very small percentage of hands. Yeah.
And I like nothing more than to get into 3, 4, 5, 6 hours into a tournament with the same basic set of tables, and you've built up a decent chip stack and you've not shown a hand.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's so awesome.
Yeah. That's great.
They have no clue what you've had at any of these hands, and they can guess, but they can't confirm.
I've actually had somebody say to me, I haven't seen your cards all day long. I'm calling just to see your cards. At which point, I turn over the nuts.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely.
All right. When we come back, you know, you brought up the concept of bluffs. I want to talk about bluffing good players, bluffing bad players, and players who just don't want to be bluffed because it goes back to ego.
Yeah,
we'll get to that in just a moment as the final table continues from Harrah's St. Louis on 590 The Fan KFNS and KFNS.com and the podcast on thechipleader.com.
From Harrah's St. Louis Casino and Hotel, this is The Final Table, the only show in St. Louis with a poker millionaire. That's Dennis Phillips and his co-host Paul Harris on 590 The Fan KFNS.
And this portion of the show is brought to you by the PPA. That's the Poker Players Alliance, a nonprofit group that we are proud to call ourselves members of, and you should too if you're a poker player. By the way, it is PPA members who may have helped defeat some bad legislation in Massachusetts. Today, there is a big deal going on in the state legislature. Having to do with online poker and brick-and-mortar poker. Now, Bernard, you live in Massachusetts, and you do your radio show there. Poker Pro Bernard Lee is our guest here on The Final Table. Tell us what the story is there and what's going on.
Yeah, well, basically what's going on that in Massachusetts is that they have been trying to get casinos there, and in all honesty, they've been sitting on their butts for years. And, you know, you have two major casinos in Connecticut, Foxwoods and Mohegan Sun. And in all honesty, this is not – I know I'm the Foxwoods representative. This is not bashing Mohegan at all. Had Massachusetts come and got a casino 10, 15 years ago, Mohegan probably doesn't exist. Mm-hmm. Just because there would have been no need, you wouldn't think that two casinos, which are 10 minutes apart, would have been able to survive.
Right.
I mean, that's really what it's business, not I'm the Foxwoods representative. That's not my point.
Correct.
So they've just been sitting on their butts, and they haven't done it, and they've pushed it off, and they've said they've had all these surveys. It's bad. You're gonna listen. If someone in Massachusetts has a gambling problem, do you really not think they're gonna cross the border and go to Connecticut an hour and a half? I mean, I don't understand the logic of that.
I know.
So instead of the billions of dollars that have gone to the Connecticut, you know, coffers, we've lost them in Massachusetts, Rhode Island, etc. This is the logic that they've had for years. Well, finally, they go, you know what? Maybe we're so out of money, we maybe might need a casino. So they're trying to pass this bill where they have slots at four racetrackish kind of things and two casinos. But guess what? They say someone who doesn't know what they're talking about says, well, online poker is going to take people away from our casinos.
Mm-hmm.
So let's fine them $24,000 and jail them for 2 years.
If they play online.
Yeah. What? Yeah. What are you talking about? You're going to tell me what to do in my own home, and by the way, this will just feed the hunger of people going to casinos? Are you really serious?
Yeah.
I I'm not a political person when it comes to a lot of this stuff. I let it play out, you know, with the UIG. I haven't gone onto a soapbox. I've said stuff about it, but what, in a lot of respects, can I do when it's national? We can do what we can, and that's what I can do. But when this thing hits my home state, and you're telling me I'm going to be jailed for 2 years for something that I do when I want to do it on my own time, and I don't bother anybody, brother, I'm going to start getting on this soapbox big. And if they need my help with regards, and they've called me on several occasions on certain things, and I've passed, this one, I would have, I mean, in all honesty, I'm going to do whatever it takes. This is ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous.
I was just reading this morning that the PPA sent out an email to all of its members, and its members bombarded the Massachusetts legislature with response to this, and that anti-online poker wording in the legislation is 99.9% coming out.
Good.
It's not officially done yet. It's not been scratched out in the official version of the bill, but it is because of members of the Poker Players Alliance putting pressure on that legislature that got that done. Now, we can continue to do this, not only in state legislatures, but also in the Congress of the United States and in courthouses around the country as well, by banding together. And that's what the PPA is about. And it only works if we have more people who are poker players who join up. Go to the website, thepppa.org, thepppa.org, and join up and join us in the Poker Players Alliance.
And one quick note, and you bring it up right there, educating the people, because I guarantee that legislature had that
no
legislator
idea.
Had no idea what he
None.
Was doing,
right.
what he was writing there, the whole
None.
Bit.
Yes.
They talk about skill versus luck. They talk about all these other things. PokerStars has over 40 billion hands on record. They have sent selected groups and random groups of millions of hands to people to be analytically analyzed to see whether it is luck, whether it is skill, whatever.
Yep.
Guarantee we have it documented by independent sources now that at least 70% of the hands are decided by skill. Period.
In other words,
end of discussion.
In other words, if you just dealt the cards out,
yeah,
they would win one way. But in real poker, 70% of the time, the best player wins, regardless
Correct.
Of whether he has the best cards.
Correct.
He or she.
Well, yeah.
I was playing an event at Foxwoods on Saturday. We had set up some home game stuff. We played a tournament at night, and a gentleman was sitting next to me. And we were talking about hands, and I was literally calling out hands. I go, you know, these two are tanking, and then he finally calls. I go, he's got a six. He flips over a six. This guy had middle pair, board was six high. You know, if you're listening, I bluffed you, by the way. I had jack 10, and a king hit the board, and I fired out.
Yeah.
And he thought about it a while, and he mucked, and I go, I got lucky on the river. I hit the king. And he go, I go, you had sevens or eights, right? And he goes, yeah, I had eights. I mean, this is skill. We know that. The guy next to me went, my God, I thought you guys just got lucky. I didn't realize you actually.
Yeah.
I called about five of six hands.
Yeah.
Literally. I said, I'm going to give me five hands. I'll guess it. And he just sat there and went, wow, there is more skill in this thing than I thought.
Yeah. By the way, I'd like to say to all the people who are going to sit down in cash games with Bernard and Dennis and me, it's all luck.
That's right. That's right. That's right. I have no idea what your cards are.
By the way, one other thing on the PPA front, and that is that Barney Frank's House Financial Services Committee had scheduled a hearing for
yes.
this Friday.
Yeah.
That has now been postponed.
Yeah.
So we'll keep you posted on that as well, because he's got
yeah.
the online poker
yeah,
thing.
I read that.
But
now
that was postponed because of a scheduling conflict, not
right.
because of anything else.
Correct.
So
right.
it's not any negative.
Yep.
It's just they have to get a scheduling conflict.
Correct.
Resolved.
Now let's get back to bluffing, which I promoted that we would talk about in this segment. Because I find this actually more in tournaments than I do in cash games. And that it is people who just don't want to be bluffed. They have this great fear of running into somebody who's taking advantage of them. And so they find themselves calling with a good hand, but not the best hand. And they are draining chips just because their ego won't let them be bluffed. You know what I'm talking about here, Dennis?
I do, absolutely. You see it all the time, especially in kind of middle-of-the-line players, I call it. You know, when it's folded around to the button and he's going to maybe raise with almost any two cards, you have a mediocre hand here, but you really have nothing. Why waste the chips? He's making a move, so the next thing, you're the small blind, next hand, maybe you're going to do the same thing. Let him have it. Move on. It's two cards. You got a small blind out there. You know, no big deal.
Right. We had the same situation, same tournament, ironically. And it was the same situation where a gentleman bet. Another guy, he raised it. Another guy called. The flop came ace high. I think it was ace 6-4, let's say. The original person bet, And this person who made the raise, he had eights. He thought about it forever, and he just thought about it and goes, oh, I don't know if I can lay this down. And I whispered to the guy next to me. I go, I bet he has anywhere from, sixes to nines or something like that. That's what I told him. And because had he had more, it just would have played out maybe a little differently. Or if he had queens or kings, I think he would have he might have smooth called on the flop. I'm sorry. He might have just limped. So anyway, he doesn't fold. He bets. He calls. The turn comes nothing again. The guy leads out, and he goes into the tank forever. Now, this is a major bet. The first one was kind of a probing bet maybe, but this one was a major bet. That was about 40% of a stack. This is your decision here. You're going to go for it or you're not. Mind you, this isn't a deep stack tournament. He calls. And then on the river, the guy shoves all in, and he goes, well, now I'm in too deep, and he calls. He flips over eights, by the way. The other guy flips over ace raggish, ace nine, or whatever.
On a flop of ace six.
Or is ace 6-4 or something like that. You know, I mean, it wasn't anything. And actually, you're right. I think it was ace. Now come to think of it, it might have been ace 6-6, and that's why I said the other guy has either an ace or he has a six. That's what I whispered to this guy.
Yeah.
So he said to me, he goes, well, what was I supposed to do? I was committed. I said, no, stop. You weren't committed on the turn. You committed yourself. And at that moment, I would rather have him shoved, to be honest.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Wouldn't you rather him shove on the turn?
The call is horrible there. If you shove, you put the pressure on the other person, away you go.
Exactly.
But just a smooth call there with a mediocre hand is just such a great way to bleed chips.
And I asked him, I said, why? He goes, well, I wasn't sure if he had an ace. I go, well, what if he had a six for the three? What if he had nines?
Yeah.
I mean, who says that you're winning there? It's a much harder decision when you have ace two. You know, I mean, that's a different story because you're worried about his kicker, and I can kind of understand it a little bit more. I still think you should be folding. That's beside the point. But I don't understand when they're calling with middle pair with especially an ace on the board. I mean, most people are going to be playing these ace raggish kind of stuff. So it's something where they just are so stubborn, they don't want to fold, and this gentleman said, well, what was I supposed to do? I was committed. You were not committed. You were committed maybe on the river because you made a bad call on the turn. And like Dennis and I were saying, listen, if you're going to make those calls, I've said it all the time, let them make the decision. I would rather you shove and them go like, oh, no, wait a second. Maybe they have ace better kicker. Maybe they have the six, whatever.
Yeah, I mean, think of the hands this guy could fold then.
Absolutely.
He's got an ace five. He's going, oh, Lord, I'm killed.
Right.
I've got nothing here now on it. Or,
he could have two pair at that point.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. All sorts of things. So putting the pressure on your opponent is such a key to this.
Right.
You've got to put pressure on them.
You know, that notion of I'm committed gets people in trouble, and I find that actually more in cash games than in tournaments.
Yeah.
Well, the pot was so big. It's a $2,000 pot, and it's only $600 to call. I'm getting more than 3-1 on my money. I had to put the $600 in. No, you didn't have to do anything.
Right.
What you had to do was think to yourself, am I beat here?
Well, in addition to that, why did the pot get to 2,000? And they didn't think of that stage. They're already at the stage of 2,000. Did you help make this pot as big as it was?
Yeah.
You didn't have to. I've seen so many people building up pots that are so huge for no reason without the stone cold nuts.
Mm-hmm.
And that, I mean, and I think that that's really where, myself, Dennis, and everyone else has the advantage. Listen, we're going to build a pot when we know we can build a pot. And we're going to keep it small when we want to keep it small. And, put all those things together. And that's why we get chips when we need to, and we avoid, avoid losing a lot of chips is almost as good as winning a big pot.
Well, that's how you make money in poker, is you put the money in when you have it, and you don't put a lot of money in when you don't have it or think that somebody might have you beat. And that notion of, well, I had to put it in because the pot was so big, is how you lose. You know what? You may not lose your entire stack there. But if you lose a quarter of your stack, those are chips you can't play with anymore.
Absolutely. Especially in a tournament, because you can't buy back in.
Right.
Cash is one thing where you can always take it out of your pot and your pocket. And in cash scenarios, pot odds is a lot more important, in my opinion, because, if life is a long-running cash game, then it'll all even out in the end. And if you always have a 5% advantage, that's going to go to your favor. In a tournament, I always think you have to still throw in. Greg Raymer disagrees with me, but I still think you have to throw in the factor of survival. The pot odds are there. You're a 70-30 underdog, but the pot odds are giving you the odds to call. I'm a 70-30 underdog. If I lose this hand, I'm out and I'm crippled. I still think that has to be put into the equation. And if that's put into the equation, I don't care if the pot odds are just there for me. I'm going to fold. I mean, that's my mind.
I had several discussions with Greg about that, too. And he and I disagree somewhat on it also because he was talking about the first hand of a tournament. And you know you're a 54-46 favor. Yeah, are you willing to throw
and
all your
says,
chips
absolutely,
in?
Absolutely.
He says you got a 4 or 5% advantage there. You've got to put it in there. I don't think so.
I disagree, too.
I honestly think that, you know, you, Greg, me, we're better than the average player.
Absolutely.
Alrighty. Obviously, we can. There's people out there better than me.
Right.
But you're better than the average player. Why do I want to get it in with what is essentially a race?
Coin flip. Absolutely.
Let's get it in. You know, I'd much rather you take that pot. Mm-hmm. I have no problem. Let's play for another 3 or 4 hours.
Right.
At the end of it, I feel confident that I'll have some of your chips back.
After, if we are going to be playing over a considerable amount of time, I don't want one moment in time to determine how many chips I take away from you. I want multiple opportunities to take those chips away from you. And I agree. With it being a coin flip, I think that there are going to be times where I can read that player well enough that I'm going to have them ship it when I have not a 54-46. They could be shipping it when I have an 80-20.
Yeah, exactly. And I hate also getting bled down by playing that because then it limits the hands you can play.
Yeah.
It limits how you play poker. I mean, you know, if you're sitting there with a short stack, you play so much different than you do when you're you know, twice the chip average.
And let's make it crystal clear. Greg Raymer is the 2004 World Series champ.
Yes.
He had an incredible run in 2005, the year that I ran and with Joe, and he almost won the 40,000 last year, and he's one of the best big stack players in the world.
Yes.
So to say that I understand because he wants that big stack so he can run over the table. So let's make sure that we're all not sitting here saying Greg Raymer doesn't know what he's talking about. The guy is brilliant, and he knows what he's talking about. We just disagree with that one note.
Thank you for saying that, because Greg is much bigger than me. Yeah. I really don't want him upset. He's also a very good friend of mine.
I remember you fighting off a couple of robbers in the hallway at the Bellagio.
That's right.
He did with you know, tens of thousands of dollars in his pocket.
I think Greg is a great player. He's a good friend of mine as well. I've taught with him at the World Series Academy numerous times, but you know, it's two different logics. And listen, this is the beauty of poker, right?
This is the skill level that we're talking about.
Absolutely.
How you play it, your own strategy.
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely different.
Hey, one of the things that we debuted here at this World Series of Poker Circuit event is the brand new Final Table merchandise. I'm wearing one of our baseball caps, which come in three colors. I'm wearing one of our long sleeve sweatshirts because poker rooms are cold.
There you go.
Dennis is wearing one of our Cuba Vera shirts. We also have special shirts that we made up for this event and others like our Uncle Sam, I Want You at the Final Table shirts, and many, many more. If you were not here in St. Louis to buy them in person, then you can go to Dennis's website, thechipleader.com. Once you're inside there, click on the button that says Shop, and you'll be able to see some, not all of the merchandise. We're going to be adding more merchandise over the course of the next few weeks, and you can add that to your poker wardrobe and take it with you as you play. We had a lot of people buy it up. In fact, we ran out of large and extra large T-shirts and sweatshirts by about the fourth day.
Large and extra large. Notice he got that in there. Yeah.
Yeah.
All the 2Xs are also gone.
I was about to say, wow, I'm amazed you got a lot of 2Xs left.
I didn't say we had any 2Xs left. I will tell you that next time we order them, we are ordering some 3X and a 4X.
There you go.
I forgot about the size of some of our poker-playing brethren.
And you have a lot of mediums and smalls left.
Yeah, Vanessa Russo, by the way, emailed me and said, I heard you talking about the shirts. Can I please have a small? And I thought, I don't know that we have a small. we may have to come up with some ladies' designs that we'll do for Vanessa and Jen Harmon and some of our other guests
absolutely.
That we can send to them. But if you'd like to see the stuff we have, including the hats with the four aces on them and much more, you can go to Dennis's website, thechipleader.com, click on the button that says Shop, and it's all there, and you can buy it with your credit card, and we'll ship it right out to you. We also hope to have this at future events where you can buy it in person as well. Bernard, we've got a minute left. What's coming up at Foxwoods?
In May, May 11th through the 17th, we're holding our four times a year we have our Mega Stack Challenge, where it's 340, 560, and 1650 buy-in, those three events. And it's a mega stack. You have like 20, 30, and 40,000 chips, starting chips, respectively. Pretty good fields. $500,000 guarantee for all three events. So it's always a big event in Connecticut. Hopefully Dennis will come out, maybe Paul yourself as well, and we'll be out there talking. But nice event out there, and hope anyone in the area, if you're interested, come on out. And over last one was first and second, over six figures for money.
All right. Bernard Lee, spokesperson for Foxwoods Casino in Connecticut, and also co-host of ESPN's Inside Deal, which is monthly now but goes weekly once the World Series starts up in May, and then will be weekly right through the November 9. So that's 6 months of weekly work for Bernard.
It will be.
Dennis Phillips, Team Poker Stars Pro, you're in the main event here, and then you're off to do what?
Well, I guess I'm going to go to Monte Carlo. What the heck, right?
Why not?
Poker Stars has another event over there. I went to it last year.
That's the EPT finale?
Correct. It is. It'll be a monster one. The main event is 10,000 euros, which is about $14,000 for the entry into it. Last year was a huge event, and this year looks to be probably a little larger even.
All right. Also, a reminder to watch Dennis on the NBC Heads Up Championship, which starts this Sunday at 11 Central Time and will then air right through the middle of May. He's also going to be on the NAPT coverage on ESPN, which starts next Monday night, the 19th. And he's also on the Windy City Poker Championship, which is on the air in Chicago and other cable systems across the country. And he's here with me every Tuesday at the Final Table. We'll see you next week from Harris St. Louis on 590 The Fan KFNS and KFNS.com.